This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. My name is Eric Blum, breaking down Mizzou sports with you every week here on the show. Joining me, as always, is the Tribune's Langston Newsome. How are you doing, Langston?
Doing absolutely fantastic. How about yourself?
Doing okay on Wednesday the 13th, coming back after a kind of a really busy and jam-filled episode. We don't have really too much else to talk about this week. It feels very, very different compared to last week. Missouri men's basketball did return today to practice after, I guess, a little under a week with a COVID pause, two games pause. They're slated to now play at Texas A&M, have not played since the last time we came to you with that loss to Mississippi State. Women's basketball also hasn't played in the meantime. They played Arkansas on January 3rd, have not played because of pauses at Auburn and Vanderbilt. They play tomorrow night against at Ole Miss. And football's football. Nothing new on the D.C. search, although one of the candidates that we mentioned might have a chance at the job, Kevin Steele, joined the staff at Tennessee. So he is out. Langston, what do you want to talk about?
I guess let's start with the national championship game and really what wasn't a contest at all. And my biggest takeaway from just seeing Alabama steamroll Ohio State was, one, I felt bad for Ohio State fans just for, you know, for a small second, because they worked so hard not playing games because they only played six due to COVID-19 in the Big Ten schedule and things like that. But there were so many people invested in the Big Ten to making sure that Ohio State had its chance at getting to the playoff and potentially winning a championship. This was the team that was going to be able to do it. And then to watch them just be overmatched at pretty much every position against Alabama, for a second, you're just kind of sad. It's like, this was their year. They got into politics. They went against, you know, the coronavirus. They did everything to start this season back up for the Big Ten, just to go out there and get slacked. And I was just watching that and thinking to myself, I hope it was all worth it. I hope it was worth it. I hope the people made money. The players didn't. Jalen Waddle was out there looking absolutely injured. I don't know if you were able to stomach watching him play. And I was just like, he's not going to see a dime from this. And that's all I could really think about.
I wish they'd done what they did with Landon Dickerson, because it didn't really make a difference. Like, just trot him out there for the last play and just have him be the quarterback and just take the knee. Just like, okay. Just have him in a little show like, okay, bye. Now I'm going to go make millions in the NFL. See ya. That's what I think should have happened, but you're absolutely right, and I'm glad I didn't see any articles coming out like who would have won the national title if coronavirus didn't affect the season. It would have been Alabama. Like, let's be real. This was Alabama's title to lose, and you know, you got, this is the Ohio State team who clearly beat the third best team in the country. A healthy Clemson with Trevor Lawrence clearly outclassed them, and then got outclassed by Alabama themselves. No doubt about it. And my biggest takeaway kind of coming out of it is I'm glad Alabama and Ohio State right now got their chance to play in the national title game, and I'm glad, regardless of how it happened, we got to the finish line and crossed it, because there are some questions as to whether that can happen in college basketball. I still think it will, but it is just as much of a question as the concern is only growing, I feel like, as to whether that will happen. But my main takeaway from the Alabama-Ohio State game was, I don't think either of those teams will be in the title game next year. That's my big takeaway. And I don't think Clemson will be either. So, kind of interesting to see where the 2021 season goes, but as of right now, my prediction would not have Clemson, Ohio State, or Alabama in next year's title game.
Is that really just based off of just the amount of talent they're going to be losing to the NFL? Really kind of like an LSU this year, where it's a retooling, let's say. You might have the five-star recruits, but when you lose so much talent, as those teams really kind of are, it's going to, you know, easy to have a down year coming back from that.
I guess so. I mean, I hate to say it, but even in my top five, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State would be 3, 4, and 5. So it's not like they're dropping that far, like going to have an LSU type of season where they're 5-5 at the end of the day and they lose to Missouri. You know, not like that. I just think that there's two teams that just have less red flags going into the 2021 season. And right now my preseason national championship pick is Oklahoma. And I know how facetious that kind of sounds, knowing what they've had the past couple of years, and just how even with the Kyler Murrays and the Baker Mayfields, they just find a way to lose. You know, and that, you know, at the end of the day, and they probably should have gotten better from that Baker Mayfield team that just got absolutely, probably should have beat Georgia in that Rose Bowl game, but then Georgia should have beat Alabama in that national championship game 3 years ago. But yes, in a sense, I just think that when you look at, I guess, Oklahoma's last 10 games and how that defense played, and they're getting everyone back and reinforcements, they just have very little holes. And just all the talent at Georgia coming back with a defense to match the offense, and JT Daniels going to be there, I think that those got to be the top two teams in the country right now going into 2021, and that's why I can say that. So we'll see. I mean, it's kind of a pointless thing to talk about, really, because there were some predictions that said, well, Missouri can be a top 25 team next year, and some that also said, well, they're not in the top 50. So who knows?
Yeah, it is entirely too early, but, you know, some people love writing that column or having that, you know, piece come out right after the national championship game. I guess my question is for you, with the ratings being so severely down for this year's title game, I think it was 18.7 million, less than both of the semifinal games. Does this model did you enjoy the national title game? And then two, do you believe that the college football playoff will continue to, it's always going to make money, but do you think ratings will continue to go down, especially when you have these lopsided, you know, competitions against, you know, Alabama, insert anyone else?
Well, I did enjoy it. It's a national championship game regardless, and, you know, you need entertainment during a pandemic. I think what hurt ratings more than anything else is the lack of parity. At the end of the day, if it was a roll-through game for, name a random Power 5 school that's has a nice, let's pick on Michigan. Let's say Michigan lived up to expectations and then ran through Wake Forest like that. I think ratings are up. It's just seeing Nick Saban again, okay, and then if they happen to have it, it's Ohio State, who's had their fair share of fun. I think the lack of parity is starting to hurt college football when you see the same teams over and over and over again. There was no new teams who entered, you know, had their first time appearances. There's only been one the last 2 years, and that was LSU last year in the college football playoff. I think what needs to be done is reform around the college football playoff and having eight teams in it. You have each winner of their Power 5 conference. The conference championship winners automatically get in. The best team from the group of five and the at-large two of anybody else, no matter who it is, get in. The quarterfinal rounds on campuses do 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5, and then you go into the New Year's Six rotation like you're doing now. I think that lack of parity going into giving a team like a Cincinnati a shot would have skyrocketed ratings.
I'm never going to turn down more football, but I will say that 1-8 matchup would be pretty much unwatchable, especially when your one would have been in Alabama this year. I think they're steamrolling literally anyone.
8 would have been Oregon, I think, this past year. 8 would have been no, that's wrong. No, that's actually right. 8 would have been Oregon.
Yeah, and so I guess my fear for expanding the playoffs would have just been the same that I had for the NFL playoffs when you allow a team like the Bears in that 2-7 matchup against the Saints. It was a boring game. The Bears had no place, you know, being in the playoffs, and it wasn't competitive at all. So I guess, you know, adding more teams, yeah, it would drum up the excitement until you actually watch the games and you see the gap in talent.
Well, when you have the 1-16 matchup in the NCAA tournament, it's kind of the same deal. But you look at 2-7 of, I guess that would end up being Ohio State, Oklahoma. I think there's some interest there. 3-6 would have been, that would have been Clemson, Oklahoma. 3-6 would have been Ohio State, Cincinnati. Cincinnati, Ohio versus Ohio State, that would have been phenomenal. And then Texas A&M, Notre Dame, I think would have balanced that out completely in the other direction. But I agree with you. Alabama, Oregon would have been, let's see what Devontae Smith can do against a Pac-12 team.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what that would have been. I agree with you there. But I think the lack of parity and just the indifference to, wow, another year, another Alabama title, and this is the best team they've had per the competition. I don't think this is the best team they've had. I think this is probably the weakest national championship team we've had in a few years, to be honest with you. That defense could not stop Joe Burrow. That defense could not stop, you know, a few other Alabama teams. I think the Alabama team, the Tua Tagovailoa team, you know, 3 years ago, we just mentioned, beats this team. So, but per the competition, they were the right team at the right time in a COVID year. We'll go into our special guest now before we come back and talk about other stuff. I talked to former Tribune reporter Daniel Jones, former Mizzou reporter. He was our special guest this week, and he kind of broke down what he's been up to since leaving the Tribune almost 2 years ago. So without further ado, here's my interview with Daniel Jones. Joining the Mizzou Sports Podcast this time is the former Tribune Mizzou football beat writer, Danny Jones. How you doing, Danny?
All right. How are you doing, Eric?
I am doing well. Great to have you back on the podcast. I think for the first time in almost 2 years, you were the host up until about when you left the Tribune in March, April 2019. Just kind of give an intro to, for anyone who does not know who you are, give an intro to who you are.
Yeah, it was a long time ago that I was hosting the podcast. But I used to work at the Tribune covering Mizzou football, and before that, Mizzou basketball, and before that, high school sports. So about 2 years ago now, almost 2 years ago, I went on to accept a new job in Washington, D.C. So, Eric, I know you've taken over the Mizzou beat for the Trib and doing a great job. So happy to come back on the podcast, just like old times.
I appreciate you coming on, and only learned from some great people. You, Cam, Hunter taught me a ton, no doubt about it. If you could reminisce a little bit about your days, maybe in Columbia and on the beat, what kind of stands out to you as you look back on that time?
Oh, man. Wow. Well, I went to school at Mizzou, too. So there's, I spent 7 years in Columbia, 4 as a student, and then actually almost 8 years. So, 4 years as a student and then almost another 4 years working at the Tribune. So I kind of got to see Columbia from two different perspectives, and they're very different. The first 4 years was as a student, and I grew up in Kansas City. It was the first time I'd lived anywhere but Kansas City. So, getting to know Columbia and what makes it special, and enjoying Mizzou sports as a fan, as a student, going to basketball games and football games. My freshman year was 2012. So that year, the basketball team, it was the first year under Frank Haith. They were ranked in the top 5 in the country. They beat Kansas on Big Monday, in that epic game at Mizzou Arena where Marcus Denman went on a tear at the end of the game and he raised a deficit. That was one of the most amazing sporting events I've ever witnessed. And, that was my first year at Columbia. And then, kind of transitioning from there and watching Mizzou football win 2 SEC East titles as a student, then taking over the beat from some really talented writers. The Trib has such a legacy of great writers, and especially ones that have covered Mizzou over the years. So, it was a quite an honor to get a chance to do that, as I'm sure you understand now. And the teams that I covered weren't really spectacular by any stretch. It was 1 year of Kim Anderson basketball, which didn't go very well, but there was a really cool moment in the SEC tournament when Kevin Puryear hit a buzzer beater to beat Auburn. One of the funnest games that I've covered. Just, a ray of sunshine at the end of a pretty dark period of Mizzou basketball history. There were some good moments covering 2 years of Mizzou football during the Barry Odom years. Those are what sticks out in my memory. There were some pretty amazing colleagues I worked with at the Trib. Obviously, like you mentioned, there's yourself, Eric, and then there's also my colleague Cam, who I hosted the podcast with, Hunter Dyke, the photographer there, and everybody who's there now. I worked with some of the people who are currently there, and there's a lot of people that I enjoyed spending time with at the Trib too. So a lot of good memories from Columbia.
Gotcha. How's your life been since, I guess, what, the spring of 19, kind of transitioning into near my hometown of Washington, D.C.? You've gone back into the fan aspect of Mizzou, or are you still kind of looking at it from a reporter's perspective, even kind of almost 2 years after you left the beat?
I My biography since I left is probably not the most fascinating. I took a job at a nonprofit in DC and worked there for a while, and so I got out of the sports realm and kind of immediately took to reverting back to a fan's perspective on everything. That first year after I left Mizzou football, I kind of had a little bit of a journalist perspective on it in terms of, the players who were there and kind of understanding their backstory and some of the, rationale behind decisions that were made and, players that were recruited for a certain reason. And, as a journalist, you have an understanding of that. And I mean, even to this point, a lot of well-informed fans have that perspective. But, that initial period, I had a little bit of that background knowledge, but it's been almost 2 years now. I've been completely separated from the program, not covering it and watching it from 1,000 miles away. And, a lot of the players on the football team this year, I've never met before, never talked to, don't know anything about them besides what's reported publicly. And, it's very much a fan's perspective there. And I watch it, take it in as a fan as an alumni more than a former reporter, I would say. But I think that reporting, that time reporting on the team does make it difficult to ever go back to the way it used to be. You still have that journalistic mindset and kind of those feelings of maybe a little bit of emotional detachment that, separated, I guess I kind of mark as a delineation between when I was a student and I would get so invested in Mizzou football and basketball games and would live and die with the team. I still enjoy watching them. I still enjoy watching Mizzou football, basketball, and keeping up with Mizzou sports, but I definitely don't have that same level of emotional attachment with them that I did when I was a student there. So that would be kind of how things have changed. But Washington has been fun. It's been a historic stretch in this town of late, so there's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Sounds good. And I don't mind for the next question I need to ask you. I don't remember actually whether you wrote for the Maneater or not, but I don't mind if you mention a few other outlets and people that are not competition, but just a lot of fans see the end product of what the beat is and, oh, these reporters write this and do this. But from your perspective, what was just the beat like now that you can separate your time there? What was it just like just working behind the scenes on the beat to where, people saw point A of you tweeting and stuff, but point B, what was kind of the in-between? And you can shed some light maybe on that for people who don't understand that part of our job.
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a lot that goes on behind the scenes, especially if you're really good at what you do. And, there's no doubt there's a lot of journalists out there who are really good and have done the job better than I ever did. But, a lot of that is building relationships and, sometimes it's with fellow journalists and sometimes it's with people in the program and sometimes it's with people outside of the program. That's a really important part of the job, and it's, how you gain information is through mining those contacts and building relationships and, being respectful and checking in with people. And, that's such a huge part of that job as a reporter. You have to be in the know on everything all the time. And yeah, I think, certainly for a lot of journalists, you spend a lot of time on social media because it's such a wealth of information from all over the place. But you get the important information, really, the information that makes a difference through conversations. That's what that's your bread and butter. I mean, when people are following you on Twitter and reading your stories, they want the information that you're getting out of conversations and people close to the program and within the program. And, you can't get that on Twitter. So yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes work that goes into that. And it's not just showing up to press conferences and showing up to games. It's calling people on the phone. It's, showing up, it's sending texts. It's responding at odd hours all the time when things pop up that you aren't expecting, or you know, that happen at inconvenient times in your life and you have to respond to them anyway. It's not always an easy profession, but I think everybody can agree that it is rewarding in other ways. It's, you know, you always remember those games that you show up to that end up being special. You remember the conversations you had that lead to great stories. You know, I remember one of the favorite stories that I did, one of my own favorite stories from my time on the beat, was talking with Cale Garrett about the time he went to the Grand Canyon and hiked it by himself. And that just spun out of a conversation we had one day after football practice. And it wasn't really anything special about it. He kind of brought it up and it was like, hey, Cale, can you tell us a little bit more about that? And a lot of people were interested, and it was great. It was just a really cool experience that he had, and he was willing to share some pretty cool details about it, and it made for a great story. So, you know, that's how that stuff works a lot of the time. And you know, it's not all on Twitter and what happens, you know, just behind a computer screen. There's a very strong human element to all of that.
Sounds good. Kind of looking back now in your time in Columbia again, and thank you for kind of diving into all this, Danny, but just, you mentioned the Marcus Stedman game, you mentioned the Kevin Puryear game. What other big moments kind of stand out to you just as a whole? I mean, I can think of some during your times on the beat. Obviously, basketball, maybe not, but at least in 17-18 football, there were a couple moments there. But just in times, I guess, your move-in date, freshman year to moving to D.C., what were some of the highlights on the beat for you?
So, you know, I guess going back from the time I was a student all the way until the time I left, like I mentioned before, that 2012 basketball game against Kansas is one of the most memorable sporting events I've ever been to, ever seen as a fan. It's the last time that Mizzou played Kansas in Columbia. You know, that rivalry goes back 100 years. It's one of the most famous rivalries, I guess, was. You can talk about it in the past tense now, but was one of the most famous rivalries in the country. And just getting to experience it at that sort of level, where it was a national game, was incredible. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why this year has been so fun to watch Mizzou basketball from afar, is because it's been such a long time. I mean, being ranked in the top 15, the top 20 now in the country, and you have a senior team, and you know, they've kind of grown up around each other, which isn't something you've seen a lot of Mizzou basketball teams do recently. You have senior leadership. You have, you know, a coach who's really easy to root for in Konzo Martin. And, you know, it's just been a real, for me, as somebody who's, you know, followed the program since I was a student there, and as a journalist, as an alumni and everything, former journalist and an alumni, it's just really cool to see Mizzou basketball back at that level of competitiveness, because it brings back a lot of great memories of Mizzou, you know, excellence, but then also it's a new generation doing it. There were some pretty huge moments. I mean, the entire 2015 football season was historic in a lot of ways. Not all of them for the better, but certainly historic, and had huge impacts for Mizzou, you know, the entire university, but also the football program and the athletics department for years after the fact. Those were some crazy times to be a part of. And I was actually on the high school beat while all that was happening, and didn't really write a whole lot about that situation. But my boss at the time, Joe Waljasper, the Mizzou basketball writer, Steve Walentik, and the football writer, Dave Morrison, I mean, those guys were working 80-hour weeks. They were staking out University Hall, trying to get quotes from the university president, from the chancellor, Arbo and Lofton. I mean, it was just chaos at the time. You know, nobody knew if the football team was going to boycott the game. At the time, people didn't. I mean, it was kind of a sports story, in that it was the football team wrapped up in it, and Gary Pinkel, and there's the famous tweet where you know, from Gary Pinkel's account, that said, "We stand with the team," who was going to boycott the game until the president left the university. And so it was a really not a sports story that ended up in the sports section. And so you had sports reporters out there reporting on this enormous story that had news implications all across Missouri and the country. So just an incredible time to be a part of. Yeah, I can remember Joe Waljasper literally sitting outside University Hall into the wee hours of the morning waiting for Tim Wolf to come out for a quote, and Steve Wilentick doing the same thing. And those were wild times. On a maybe more of a brighter note, another game that comes to mind was going down to Florida, watching Drew Locke and Barry Odom win at the Swamp against a nationally ranked Florida team. That might have been the high point of Barry Odom's time and Drew Locke's time at Mizzou. I don't know if it ever got any better than that. That was big win for both of them. And the picture that Hunter Dyke got at the end of the game of Barry Odom hugging his kid, you know, such an important win for him. And, you know, just in terms of trying to establish some positive energy. And you know, at the time, there was people thought maybe this is, you know, what Barry Odom needed to really establish himself as a long-term Mizzou coach. And it didn't work out that way. But, you know, it's still a really significant game for Mizzou football. So, yeah, those are some of the things that come up. There's a lot more, but those are what comes to mind.
Gotcha. Yeah, just thinking from the outside perspective, because I was the high I agree with you now, having covered him for a year and now covering Drinkwitz. Yeah, that was definitely the high point. I can't think of – that was still his only ranked win in his entire tenure at Mizzou. So, yeah, I would have to agree with you there. Kind of going away from the Mizzou part of things, and I don't want you to, you know, say anything that might be controversial, but when you come back to Columbia, where's your food spot? Where are you going?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. One of the things I still crave to this day is smoked rings from D Rose. And actually, watching, I can't remember who they were playing, but watching Mizzou basketball game earlier this year, I was here in Washington, and Tom Hart, who is a Columbia native, knows the town well and the food scene, was on the call that night and mentioned D Rose smoked wings. I think John Sunvold said that his he was going to have some that night. And, you know, it was like, oh my God, D Rose smoked wings sound like the best thing in the world right now. So, you know, hearing Tom Hart say that recently has definitely sparked some cravings for some smoked wings. And I don't know if I'll ever actually, you know, shake that. I think it'll always be there. Like smoked wings from D Rose will always sound good, and no matter the situation, even if I've just ate, it might be Thanksgiving night at 7 p.m. on the verge of a food coma. I think I'd be down for some D Rose smoked wings. So that's my choice for that controversial question.
You answered it with actually a very, very nonchalant, I guess, in those terms, answer. You didn't say Shakespeare's. You didn't say like a bar. You didn't say Trops is the place of choice. You didn't say that.
Not to say that I don't have an appreciation for those places. I
no.
have to say that in my time in Columbia, I spent more time there than at any fine dining establishment. So we have to know where our priorities lie. But, you know, the good thing about Shakespeare's pizza, obviously, is special. And I think even that's kind of become controversial. I've talked to some people who aren't big fans of Shakespeare's pizza, which I find to be blasphemous. But good thing about, you know, the drinks they serve at Shakespeare's is you can find those in a lot of places. So that's one nice thing is, you know, I don't have the same craving for, draft beer because I can get that out here, but the smoked wings are a little bit tougher to find.
Very true. I guess one final question for you, Danny, and thank you for just spending the time with us. I don't know how busy you are these days in D.C., but you're obviously nice enough to take the time with us here. One final question would kind of be just, now that you've kind of gone back into the fans' perspective, what are your – if you have any thoughts on – you gave it for Mizzou basketball, but just someone who never covered Drinkwitz, someone who didn't cover the program, now that it kind of seems like they might have some momentum post-Barry Odom.
Yeah, it was definitely a an exciting season to watch from afar. The win over LSU, you know – the way LSU played the rest of the season maybe dimmed the star a little bit, but still beating the defending national champion first year for Drinkwitz. They were ranked at the time. Nobody, you know, I think nobody really knew how good LSU was or foresaw the season that they ended up having, you know, that nobody foresaw that taking place at that moment when Mizzou won the game. It was a pretty amazing victory. It was really, you know, fun to watch and be a part of, a hell of a game with the goal line stand at the end. You know, it was a proud day to be a Mizzou fan and to watch the team and follow the team that day. And there were other moments like that throughout the year. You know, they ended up in the top 25 in the college football rankings at one point. The win over Arkansas was an instant classic. And it's, you know, it's kind of exciting to see that become an actual rivalry. So few of those games have been competitive. It's really hindered any chance of that becoming an actual rivalry. I mean, it was an uphill battle to start with. That was kind of a manufactured thing, Mizzou and Arkansas, but those end up being competitive games. If there are any games coming up in the future that resemble the one that happened in December, then that will become a rivalry because those, you know, the, just the competitiveness will make it so. So that was an amazing game to watch and be a part of. And, you know, it just, those games make it really fun to be a fan. It was obviously, I think a lot of people would agree, it was disheartening that the season ended with the loss to Mississippi State the way it did. It's kind of, everybody was riding a high and, you know, wow, this is going in a great direction. And then just a real gut punch to end the season, and then no bowl game, which is understandable considering COVID, but at the same time, you know, might have been a chance to maybe gain back some of that positive momentum and energy going into next season. So it's optimistic, I think, is the feeling as a fan, and I think a lot of people would feel the same. He's shown that he can recruit pretty effectively. I know there's a big announcement coming today, or if it has, I'm not sure if it's already happened, just about a recruit that Mizzou has their eyes on. You obviously know more about it than me, but yeah, it's there is a lot to look forward to, I think, for Mizzou football. There was some positive signs. It's not quite at the level that I think, you know, a lot of fans hope that it could get to. I think, you know, when you talk about where you want Mizzou to be, you want them to be competing for a division title once every 5 or 6 years or somewhere like that. You want the possibility of a SEC championship game to be on the table, and they are not there now just because the SEC East is so good with Georgia and Florida. So maybe at a certain point they can get to that level and compete, but it is exciting. Elijah Drinkwitz has shown that there's some stuff to be excited about this year. I guess now they have to figure out what they're going to do about a defensive coordinator, but you know, in the meantime, there's a lot to look forward to.
All right, that was Danny Jones, former Mizzou beat reporter here at the Tribune. Definitely great to catch up with you, man, and I will talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
We would like to thank our sponsors for the Mizzou Sports Podcast. University of Missouri Healthcare. University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to be the official sponsor of MU Athletics. Blue Events. Let Blue create your perfect event. Their passion for food, service, and presentation ensures that you will have a seamless and memorable event, no matter the size. They will work with you to bring your vision to life. Phyllis Nichols, State Farm Insurance. There when things go wrong, here to help life go right. And now back to our podcast.
And thank you once again to Danny for joining us on the Mizzou Sports Podcast. Definitely a great throwback Wednesday we had today on the show. But without further ado, follow Mizzou Football with the Tribune's Tiger Extra newsletter. Sign up at columbiatribune.com/TigerExtra for stories, galleries, and podcasts in your inbox every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Mizzou Sports Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop at your neighborhood Zaxby's today. And the Columbia location of Zaxby's is where, Langston?
104 Cinnamon Hill Lane.
That is correct. I actually had Zaxby's last week. Last Friday, actually, in the middle of covering Mizzou wrestling, I went there and then came back. I got the General Tso's wings.
Brand new. Nice little plug. Boom, 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 boom.
They were They were pretty good. They weren't the best thing I've ever had, because I know Danny said his favorite place in Columbia was D Rose, and I completely support that talk. But it was very good with complete meal. You get the fries, and you get still the Texas toast. It was very much well worth the $8 I spent. I can tell you that.
There we go. We'll just take out the part where you said it was all right. Zaxby's, it was amazing, mind blowing. Couldn't believe how good the chicken was.
It wasn't well. Maybe here's the thing. It wasn't glistening like your General Tso's Chinese food chicken. Maybe they need to open the fat content a little. I don't know. It wasn't just glistening with MSG to galore. I didn't feel awful after eating it. How about that?
There we go.
Yeah, that's like I usually do with Chinese food. Okay, going back to just Mizzou basketball now. They are still slated to play at Texas A&M on Saturday. It's nice to have sports back. At least in the Mizzou realm to cover, not find things to write about. Coming out of the restart here, what would you want to see from Mizzou men's basketball, Langston?
It's weird because, you know, you almost obviously you want them to play their games as scheduled, but you kind of wanted them to get right back on the court after that Mississippi State loss and kind of exercise those demons of that second half collapse. So it's going to be a little bit different seeing them now nearly, you know, a week later, or excuse me, it's going to be over a week later. Than when we recorded when they play on Saturday. So it's really just seeing them, have they taken this time? I know they haven't practiced, but, you know, mentally gotten over that hurdle of, okay, you dropped that Mississippi State game. Let's move forward. This is still a good team. This is still a competent team. Missouri is better than what they showed in the second half against the Bulldogs.
I agree, and I think one thing that kind of has to change is now, well, that was so out of character for this team. How do you make sure it prevents – happening again? And so I wrote a story about that for today's Tribune. It's so out of character. Like, why did this happen in the first place, even to begin with? Is it just the outlier and you have to get it over with better now than in, you know, March to do it? But that's just the kind of the weird part for me, is why did this even have to happen in the first place? And so how have they, you know, corrected that? And obviously because of certain NCAA and HIPAA laws to begin with, we don't know what type of COVID infection they had. Maybe we'll find a tiny bit out more tomorrow when they speak to the media for the first time in 9 days tomorrow. We know we're getting Pinson and Tillman, so therefore we know they're fine. As of right now, they wouldn't put them out with the media. If they had just had COVID, they definitely wouldn't do it. But they're definitely fine now. They wouldn't do it like, hey, you're in quarantine, you can talk to the media. That wouldn't happen. So I think going to Texas A&M is not a bad thing. At the end of the day, the SEC is more wide open than it has been in a while, but A&M looked awful last time they played against Tennessee. I'm not sure they played this past week, but I haven't heard anything different about what they're doing. Looking at the roster, it's a good matchup for Missouri. I think if there's a game kind of return to you'd want right now, Vanderbilt at home or on the road against Texas A&M is kind of where I think you'd want one of those two matchups.
Yeah, definitely. It's a game that Missouri should win. And what's, I wouldn't say frightening, but yeah, no, let's go with that. What's could be frightening about the game on Saturday is if Missouri comes out and they're a little sluggish and they're a little rusty, it's understandable. They didn't practice for nearly a week. And so I think Missouri fans heading into this game, all that you're thinking about is probably that Mississippi State collapse. But you do have to understand they didn't get to practice. It's not going to be some type of, oh, how they played against Illinois, you know, a few weeks back. It's going to take some time, especially early on in the first half, for them to kind of gel and for them to kind of get back in the rhythm of things. I know they're going to practice beginning tomorrow, but when you miss a week like that, there's still some type of hangover from that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But kind of looking now going forward, you know, you get back home next week against at home against South Carolina, who we really don't know anything about. They've been on a COVID pause even longer than Missouri has, and then going to Knoxville next Saturday for the next game after that. Missouri is kind of getting right back in it, but one thing I think you got to put everything in context, and while you expect Missouri maybe to be sluggish, they lost a little bit of the goodwill they had built up throughout the season, they're still heavily on the right side of the bubble here. They're a 5 seed according to Joe Lunardi in the latest projection. It's all high major teams and teams who are locks almost and 1 through 11. So there's 24 spots Missouri still has to drop, and probably 16 they had to drop before they're clearly on the bubble. So keep those things in mind as you go forward. Missouri did so much right before they started conference play to where they're going to have a disastrous, even still at this point, a disastrous rest of the conference season to not make the NCAA tournament at this point. You really would have to think that way. You know, Danny kind of talked about how much this team is really fun, and I think you just don't lose those things regardless of COVID and regardless of a bad half.
No, I completely agree. So even if they do drop this game against Texas A&M, it's not time to, you know, slam the alarm and to freak out. But it would be concerning. You know, you just want to see them kind of move past mentally and physically that Mississippi State loss. And I think Missouri will get that done, and it will take care of things against Texas A&M and South Carolina. And then we have the, you know, a top 25 matchup against Tennessee.
Very cool. We'll bring you updates with that, and Missouri women's basketball returning to the court as well. Nothing new on the defensive coordinator front, as we already talked about. A lot of the commits are starting to move in now, but there's no new spring football news to bring you quite yet. So I'll leave you with this, Langston. Your thoughts on James Harden?
For those
who don't know, while I was recording with Danny, not only did the impeachment news broke, but like 5 minutes later, James Harden going to Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Nets broke. I know you're a big NBA fan. What are your thoughts?
It is I'm pro player empowerment. I'm never going to be pro billionaire, but it's really sad to see a player like James Harden, after 8 years in Houston, quit on a franchise, quit on his teammates, quit on the front office, quit on the coach. And that's what he did last night when he said they're just not good enough and the situation could be fixed. And you force, you know, the organization, the Houston Rockets, to trade you to Brooklyn. And it just sucks to see how it all ends, when I think there really were some high moments during James Harden's tenure in Houston. You know, they're a terrible game seven away from going to the finals and beating the Warriors, which we tout as, you know, the greatest basketball team, one of the greatest basketball teams ever. So it's sad to see that, but I cannot wait to see the dysfunction with the Nets. Kyrie, James Harden, KD, it won't work, and I can't wait to watch it blow up. And I tweeted out right after, it's like Kyrie Irving's going to love being the third option. And I know he's not with the team now, and he's doing Zoom meetings or whatever, family reasons, personal reasons, he's not there. But when he gets back, I can't wait to see how it's gonna, you know, go wrong. Because with Kyrie Irving, if it can't go wrong, it will go wrong.
Here was my thought. At the end of the day, I still don't know if they win the East. And even if they get there, they still got to go through LeBron in the West. Like, I'm just like, I mean, this is a good trade for your, I guess, all or nothing now, because you trade away so many picks to Houston. At the end of the day, I mean, Houston got Victor Oladipo, Tyrese Maxey, and like a bajillion picks. They're fine. You want to give away James Harden for that? I'd do that. The only thing now that I'm kind of expecting is, what if the Nets trade Kyrie Irving to the Wizards for Russell Westbrook?
You're ready to get rid of Westbrook already?
I'm not ready to get rid of him. I'm just that's the next thing I'm expecting. I just knowing the NBA, and you just reform that trio. I'm just waiting for that.
What I'll say is, whatever NBA team takes on Kyrie next, because now that James is there, there's no way Kyrie can coexist with those three. Kyrie doesn't change. He is who he is. I think he's a weird dude, and I think he finds ways to make situations worse than they actually are. And if you're an NBA franchise, just stay away. I felt the same way about Russell Westbrook, and I had to deal with the rumors of the Magic wanting to trade for him for years now. I want them to stay as far as they possibly can away from Kyrie. It's just one of those dudes that he's a locker room cancer, and I don't say that lightly.
Fair enough, but I got to deal with Westbrook, Beal, and I love Denny Avdia and the Wizards now. But anyway, but going back to the Mizzou pick, you know, I actually think the Nuggets might not be a bad landing spot for Kyrie, even though they got Jamal Murray and a couple other players, and I think they got a couple natural point guards there. Porter, Jokic, Irving? That's a no. He's pausing. That's a no.
That's a no.
Justin Langston, that's Langston's way
that's
of communicating.
That's a please keep Jokic, who I think is incredible. I love watching him. Keep him as far as away from Kyrie. And, you know, hopefully one day, and I don't want this to sound like a dig, but maybe MPJ will learn how to rotate on defense. That's how I feel about the Nuggets.
Fair enough. Well, on this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast, anything else Mizzou-wise you want to talk about before we get going?
I'm excited to see both teams back on the court, on the women's side and the men's side. It's back to be able to watch some MU basketball.
Sounds good. For Langston Newsome, I've been Eric Blum. Thank you for listening to this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast, and we'll see you next time.